Hello, welcome to our program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. I would like to begin today's program with an article which appeared in the Wall Street Journal on the 11th of July of this year. The title of this article is, It Takes Years to Get Subway Cleaning Jobs. This article was written for the Wall Street Journal by Cheo Dang. The most coveted job in New York City might not be on Wall Street or on Broadway, but underground instead, cleaning the subway. Transit cleaning is no path to riches and can be grueling work, but it offers stability and solid benefits in an economy where both are hard to come by. The wait to snag a job sweeping up trains and platforms can be up to 4 years, believe it or not. Openings for the position are so rare that those who do land one say it is akin to winning the job lottery. When the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, the MTA, which employs nearly 3,700 transit cleaners, called for applicants in 2022, more than 75,000 people applied over 8 weeks. When it opened applications again for the position in February of 2025, it received nearly 49,500 of them. Ramnees Jimenez got a call from the MTA in January of 2025 saying that she was hired after waiting for nearly 3 years. I was kind of in shock, she says. Cleaning up after the crowds of people who make their way on hundreds of subway trains and stations can require a strong stomach. Workers say they encounter rude or mentally unstable people and an unfortunate amount of human waste and vomit. The work can be physically demanding. Cleaners haul heavy trash bags and equipment up and down stairs. Antonio Rogers, 71 years of age, a transit cleaner, says at least once a month he finds a heavy piece of furniture that someone has tried to haul by way of the subway but gave up. They leave everything, he says. In May, he found an office chair on the platform at J Street Metro Tech that he promptly rolled out onto the garbage room. Transit cleaning is the lowest paid job at the MTA's New York City Transit Agency. Wages start at $20.89 an hour, a few dollars more than the city's $17 minimum wage. The workers earn a maximum hourly wage of $34.82 once they reach 6 years. At full time, that works out to a range of $43,451 to $72,420 each year. But the job offers a lifetime to working-class New Yorkers. Union workers make minimal contributions towards their medical, dental, and vision coverage. They get a pension plan based on their years of work and salary. Workers also see transit cleaning as a way to get a foot in the door at the MTA, which offers a range of other jobs as well with better pay. By passing a civil service exam, for example, subway station cleaners can be promoted to station agents and then station supervisors, a job that starts at $33.33 an hour. Applying to be a train conductor, which starts at $26.70 an hour, also becomes easier once a candidate has logged time as a cleaner. The same holds true for another coveted position, that of train operator, where hourly pay starts at $42.84 and increases to $43.72 an hour. You're building for the future here, says Susia Boutier, 33. She says raising a family on a transit cleaning salary feels difficult in the city, but at least she can look forward to moving on to other jobs at the MTA. Jimenez, who landed the cleaning job back in 2025, works an overnight shift at the Grand Central subway station that starts at 10 p.m. She wears a reflective vest, steel-toed boots, and if she is handling chemicals, neoprene gloves. She mops the comb plates of escalators, empties trash bins, and sweeps the platform of the number 7 line. She says she is only supposed to mop and sanitize when there is vomit or excrement. A separate crew comes by occasionally to do the power washing. Jimena says the tasks are manageable and she can take breaks when it gets too hot. At the end of her workday around 6 a.m., I don't feel exhausted, she says. Jimena says growing up, her father talked about the importance of a stable job with good benefits. He worked for New York City's Housing Authority. The 28-year-old came to appreciate his point when COVID hit and the restaurant where she had worked as a cook shut down. She found a job then taking care of disabled people where she was able to work overtime, but the hourly pay was only $17, benefits were inadequate, and there was no opportunity to move on up. The transit cleaning job, she says, allows her to provide for her 8-year-old twin daughters, whom her mother takes care of while Jimenez goes to work at night. Some workers complain about subway dust, a cocktail of tiny bits of metal from trains grinding to a stop, and other underground debris. A spokesperson for the MTA says it complies with regulations related to air quality, ventilation, and workplace safety. He says there is no data to suggest that cleaners experience any elevated rates of work-related illnesses due to air quality. Jimena says she makes herself feel better by drinking herbal teas and taking herbal liquid supplements. She still urges her friends and cousins to apply for MTA jobs because of the benefits there. For herself, one day she hopes to enroll in an MTA training program for elevator and escalator maintenance that is funded by both the union and her employer. I do plan to move on up, she says. The next article that I would like to read for you today appeared in the New York Times on the 21st of June. The title of this article is Remote Work Has Helped a Generation of Parents. This article was written for the New York Times by Claire Kane Miller. Since the pandemic, telecommuting has eased balancing jobs and caregiving. Carrie Donovan, a trial lawyer, had such a demanding career that she was not sure about having children. The coronavirus pandemic changed her calculus. Her hours remained long and unpredictable. She was the breadwinner. She moved across the country to help care for her parents after her father had a stroke. Yet, despite all of this, having children suddenly seemed possible to her because of the way the pandemic era work untethered office workers from the office. Now she has 2 children, ages 4 and 2. She still goes to the office several days each week, but the ability to work from home has made it possible for her to have both a career and a family, she said. Equally important has been a cultural change at work. What the pandemic did was people all of a sudden were talking more about their families. I have small kids, or I have a parent who's sick, and it made everything easier, she said. The pandemic is the main thing that has enabled me to remain in this job. For people whose jobs can be done at different places and times, mostly college-educated office workers, a lasting effect of the pandemic has been a newfound flexibility, which has been hard to find in the increasingly demanding American workplace. Today, 26% of parents still work remotely some days each week. And like Ms. Donovan, workers describe a new attitude at the office about family as something to be accommodated and not hidden. But after 6 years of this natural experiment, American workplace culture seems to be at a crossroads. Some employers are cutting back on benefits that have supported working parents, including remote work. A movement on the right is pushing for more mothers to stay home entirely. Yet there is evidence out there that a more flexible and family-oriented environment has benefited caregivers of all kinds, including fathers, people caring for aging parents, and especially for mothers. In interviews, some said that they wouldn't have had children otherwise. Others said that they might not have been continuing to work. Since 2023, the share of mothers of prime working age who are in the labor force in some capacity and have children 18 and under has consistently been higher than it was back in 2019, which already was a period of very low unemployment, including for mothers. It's particularly true of mothers of children under age 5, according to data analysis for the New York Times by the Hamilton Project at the Brookings Institution. Economists see these women as a bellwether because they are most affected by parenting demands and least likely to work. Mothers are working because they have to. 45% are their family's primary earners. Earnings often are not keeping up with expenses, and women suffer long-term career setbacks if they take breaks. They are also working because they want to. Women are on the average more educated than men. They're having children later, and they are investing in careers they care about. But most working parents also say they want more time with their children. While the changes are incremental, the data suggests that workplace flexibility has made it more possible for more of them to do both. Since the pandemic, mothers have been quite resilient in staying in the labor force, said Lauren Bauer, who is a fellow in economic studies at Brookings, who led the analysis. It also shows, researchers say, that changing the way more jobs operate, including jobs that don't have as much flexibility in them and where they get done, could help even more workers who are also caregivers, which is pretty much everyone at some point or other in their lives. This is a problem for society to solve, said Misty Hegeness, who is a professor at the University of Kansas. We need to start making the work environments outside of our home work for women, work for caregivers. Many obstacles to working and caregiving remain. Rising child care prices are making it more expensive to work. Women are paid less than men are, especially when they become mothers. Though mothers without college degrees are also working more, it is not necessarily because it's become easier to balance work and family. It's because it's become harder to make ends meet. Remote work has its downsides. Entry-level workers learn less from colleagues, for example. They can feel lonely, and work frequently bleeds into home life. But for those who can do it, it has been a great enabler, parents say. Women have been demanding generalized workplace accessibility for a long time now, and COVID broke that open, especially for better educated workers, Ms. Bauer said. Elizabeth Terhune, who is 37, recalls the challenges of working with an infant before the pandemic, pumping breast milk at her biology lab. When she had her second baby while working remotely during the pandemic, she could breastfeed when he was hungry and work flexible hours while still making leaps in her career. The norms had changed by that point so much, Ms. Terhune said, who lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico. It didn't have to feel like I was choosing between spending time with my small child and working. Choosing was not an option, she said. Science was too hard a field to re-enter if she took time away, and I had really put so much time and effort into something that I really felt passionate about. Parents often hid their caregiving responsibilities at work, studies have shown. Now there is more permission for arrangements such as working from home when a child is sick, attending a meeting by video instead of traveling to it, or stepping away from work for a school pickup. I think the cultural shift where everybody becomes more accepting of it is what makes the biggest difference, said Lauren Goldman, 37, a lawyer at Bowles Schiller Flexner in New York, and the mother of two children, ages 5 and 2. She and her husband, also a lawyer, work a lot. Sometimes their jobs require late nights or travel, or their nanny will cancel. But before the pandemic, colleagues told her they wouldn't tell anyone when they had to deal with a child-related issue. Now she can be honest, she said. Many men feel even more pressure to be always available at work. Yet survey data shows that post-pandemic, more of them are spending more time now with their children and seeking flexible hours. Trivikram Krishnamurthy, 50, who works in tech in Los Altos, California, takes turns with his wife, who is in finance, working from home. It enables him to pick up his son, 11, from school, and to help his daughter, who is 14, with her math homework. Doing that during the workday had once been unimaginable, he said, but now he feels unapologetic about rearranging his calendar so that he is free for the hour after school. There is this culture out there that says you shall not take any time off, and I think that part has gotten easier, he said. You still have to worry about getting your things done at work. You still have to worry about getting everything done at home. But there are no arbitrary requirements of FaceTime. As the birth rate falls in the United States, some women said the new flexibility was what enabled them to become mothers at all. Christine Mealy, who is 40, knew that having a baby on her own would be hard. She had her son, now 4, only after getting a fully remote role during the pandemic, doing human resources investigations for a pharmaceutical company in Boston. Child care is expensive, around $30,000 a year, and when he's homesick, she cannot work. But working from home while he's at daycare helps in every aspect of my life, she said. She can change laundry, or she can run errands, freeing up time when he is home. Jobs in corporate America before the pandemic had become round the clock, disproportionately rewarding people who were always on call. This often meant that mothers took lesser jobs so that they could be on call at home. For Ms. Donovan, the lawyer, who is 40 and lives in Asbury Park, New Jersey, the fear of needing to back burner the career she had spent 20 years investing in was why she had questioned having children at all. Yet the pandemic enabled her to do so while also caring for her parents and making partner at her firm, Winston Taylor. Now, depositions can be done virtually without several days of travel. She works from home a few days a week, saving 3 hours by not commuting and being there for dinner and bedtime with her children. I know for a fact that if I had to go to the office like I did pre-pandemic, I would not be in this situation, she said. Certainly, I would not be happy. The United States has long framed work-family balance as a personal problem, but researchers said remote work showed something else. Changing how work functions can make a broader difference. Many of the challenges for working parents and the solutions are about the structure of work, not people's individual effort, said Corrine Lowe, an associate professor at the Wharton School at Penn. Employers and policymakers alike have the power to reshape work for more people, researchers said. For jobs that can be done only in person or on certain hours, for example, predictability in employees' schedules is vital to arrange child care and backup plans for emergencies. Hourly workers, though, often do not have predictability. What if the corporate American workday were aligned with school hours? What if office workers had certain hours each day when they were expected to work synchronously and could choose their other hours? And what if part-time work were a right and did not mean losing health insurance or the chance to return to the same career track? What if hourly workers were required to get their schedules well in advance? And what if parents had 6 months of paid leave after a baby was born? What if childcare were paid for by the government, including after school and in the summer? And people who took breaks from employment for caregiving got stipends? What if schoolwork and society were built around the expectations that men are caregivers as well? Changes like these have happened before, researchers said. The 8-hour workday was not commonplace until the 1930s. Today's fathers are doing much more at home than their fathers ever did. During the pandemic, the federal government did subsidize child care and required paid sick leaves. We need to be bolder in demanding a decent lifestyle for parents and for workers, said Sarah Bennett Weiser, who is dean of the Annenberg School for Communication at Penn. There is this idea that nothing can change, but we had this grand experiment in the pandemic, and the economy didn't fall apart. The next article that I would like to read for you today is from the Arizona Republic, the 21st of June. This is The Right Time to Walk Away. The article was written by Leanne Rawling Williams of the University of North Dakota. Modern life has made it difficult to know when to retire. There is a scene in The Devil Wears Prada 2 where legendary fashion editor Miranda Priestly, played by Meryl Streep, is walking alone through Milan's fashion district. Her influence has been built on instinct and staying ahead of the culture. But in an industry increasingly shaped by social media, younger voices, and constant reinvention, she begins quietly questioning her own relevance. Arriving back at the hotel, she asks her husband, Stuart, when a person knows it's time to step aside. You'll know when it's time, he says. You'll just know it. It's one of the most common mantras about work, aging, and ambition, and it assumes that people will instinctively recognize when to slow down, step away, or reinvent themselves. But despite Stuart's attempt in the movie, to reassure his wife, that moment is no longer quite clear in our graying society. I research aging, mental health, and life transitions. As people live longer, work can become more than a paycheck. It's a source of identity, purpose, routine, and social connection. As a result, the question is no longer simply when to stop working, but what it takes to remain happy, healthy, and secure as you age. For much of the 20th century now, retirement was imagined as a more predictable life transition. Careers tended to follow more linear paths, and older adulthood was commonly associated with stepping away from professional life and entering a third act, with more time to focus on family, leisure, personal interests, and life outside the demands of a job. This was often seen as a well-earned reward after decades of work, and it became more accessible to Americans after Congress passed the Social Security Act in 1935 and pension coverage expanded rapidly after World War II. But over the past several decades, demographic and economic changes have significantly altered just how people experience work and aging. For one, adults are remaining in the workforce longer. In 1991, the average retirement age was 57 years old. Now, according to the United States Bureau of Labor Statistics, adults age 65 and older are one of the fastest growing segments of the labor force, with nearly 1 out of 5 holding jobs in 2024. The number of employed Americans in that age bracket rose more than 33% between 2015 and 2024. Several factors are driving this shift. Life expectancy is the highest it's ever been, and some adults continue working because they want to remain active and engaged. But others are staying on the job due to the rising cost of living, their employer-sponsored health insurance, caregiving responsibilities, or low retirement savings. But even as the U.S. economy increasingly depends on older adults remaining in the workforce, cultural attitudes about aging and ambition have not evolved at the same pace. Society sends increasingly contradictory messages about what aging is supposed to look like. On the one hand, older adults are encouraged to remain active, productive, healthy, and engaged well into their golden years. Concepts such as successful aging often emphasize continued workforce participation, independence, productivity, and purpose. And yet, older adults who remain visible in leadership or influential professional roles have found themselves increasingly criticized for failing to step aside. Samuel Moyne's May 2026 cover story in Harper's Magazine, The Old Guard, argues that America has become a gerontocracy in which older generations disproportionately dominate politics, wealth, and institutions, leaving younger Americans politically alienated and economically blocked from advancement. Moyne's article highlights legitimate concerns about generational transition and opportunity. However, it also risks overlooking the growing number of older adults who are not working longer solely out of ambition or unwillingness to step aside, but due to financial realities, caregiving responsibilities, and economic insecurity. A 2024 AARP survey found that about one out of four U.S. adults over 50 say they expect to never retire. Then there's the emotional meaning of work itself, particularly in a culture like the United States, where identity and self-worth are closely tied to professional relevance and productivity. Work ultimately offers more than money and power. Research in gerontology, rehabilitation, and occupational psychology increasingly show that work may also reinforce one's sense of self while providing structure, social interaction, routine, and meaning, especially in later adulthood. Obviously, for some adults, stepping away from work can elicit feelings of isolation or diminished purpose, particularly if their jobs were deeply connected to their identity and daily routines. Perhaps the real challenge today is not that people refuse to step away from work. It is that modern life has made that moment of recognizing when it's time far less clear. This is all the time that we have for our program on careers for today. I hope that you've enjoyed listening in and will enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you for listening in. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader, and you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.